Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David Latsulip. A rather full program for you this hour. You'll hear about the Voices of Music performance at the upcoming Berklee Festival, featuring violinist Rachel Podner and the music of Bach and Vivaldi from co-director Hanneke van Proosde. Details about ODC Dance's summer season from their deputy director, Christy Bolenbroek. Plus, Megan Solomon shares details about the collaboration between the San Francisco choral artists and the Baroque string ensemble Galax Quartet. Noah Griffin will be in studio to share the music that will be featured in tomorrow's 125th birthday celebration of Cole Porter at the Herbs Theater. He'll be joined by the show's director, Ken Bloom. Plus, regular contributor Peter Robinson offers some summer reading suggestions. Stay with us. ODC Theater celebrates the fifth anniversary of its signature summer dance festival with performances by artists from around the Bay Area and with guests from Washington, D.C. this weekend. Tomorrow, the Walking Distance Dance Festival SF will feature performances by Christopher K. Morgan and Patrick Makuakane. The festival culminates on Saturday in a series of site-specific performances, all within walking distance of ODC's two-building campus in the Mission District. Here with more details about the festival is ODC's Deputy Director, Christy Bolenbroek, who conceived the festival 5 years ago. Christy, always a pleasure to welcome you back to our airwaves.
Thank you, David.
Well, we're hearing a bit of Beethoven underneath this introduction, and for a reason. We're soon going to be joined by some hula skirts, I understand.
Now, this year's festival, and in fact the entire season, is looking at questions around identity. And I was really excited to start the festival with Christopher Morgan, who is a modern dance-trained artist, possibly his first artistic language in a very classic Western form, but was then struck and inspired by the passing of a cousin of his in Hawaii. And he realized he had this whole other branch of his family that was, you know, a hula master. And he did not have that as part of his vocation and went on a journey. So he's created an opportunity. It's definitely not a mashup. It's a very special space that there's room for both the classical in Beethoven, and we're listening to Witold, a electric cellist arrangement of the Moonlight Sonata, and then also original Hawaiian music that's been composed for the show with Kumo Elsie Ryder, who is from his late cousin's halau in Hawaii. And to have both of them hold the space, and then Christopher's developed this whole personal journey that he walks us through on his exploration and takes us in the style of dance and video projection is quite fascinating.
So what will we see on stage then?
He talks, he moves, he holds the space with a great sense of stillness and ritual. So I think there's a lot of expectation. You know, some people, when they hear about Hawaiian culture, they might have Gidget Goes to Hawaii in mind. And it is not that. He gives it a real serious treatment and consideration and makes it human in a way of telling history. I was reminded a little bit about Sarah Vowell's Unfamiliar Fishes, the book that she did also to understand why a Hawaiian lunch plate can have tuna salad and Spam on it at the same time.
When were you first exposed to his work?
It was a couple of years ago at various dance conferences that he actually sought me out and said, I'm really interested. San Francisco is on the way to Hawaii for most of the artists in our country, and they are anxious to share their work here. And we started a relationship But immediately upon finding more out about what he was doing, I knew I wanted to pair him with Patrick Mokuakane and Nele Hulu here in the Bay Area.
And so the entire festival is centering around this Hawaii connection then?
The proscenium show on Friday night is this very special cultural connection. For those that don't know, Patrick is a Bay Area treasurer, and he is originally from Hawaii and is dedicated to continuing the traditions of dance in the Hawaiian form, but also does his form of hula mua and pushing it forward. So to have the opportunity through dance to look at Hawaiian culture from a sense of identity was really interesting to me. But then we shift on Saturday to a free performance that actually looks at the identity of a neighborhood. And we'll be doing a walking tour. It's almost 2 hours across an 8-block stretch of the Mission District, looking at different sites and placing artists around those locations.
Oh, nice. The ODC has done that before in terms of site-specific dancing on buildings, so to speak, or around structures.
We love that. And with the 5th anniversary, why not go big?
Right. So 5 years into this, what have you discovered that's, you're exposing hundreds of more people to dance just through this very special weekend, and it's a tribute to what you're doing at OGC for this festival.
It's been fascinating because you have to make such judicious choices. In some ways, the festival was conceived as a response. We knew audiences had shorter attention spans, so if they were going to go to one dance event a year, I wanted them to see as many artists as possible in manageable bites. And so each year, for the handful of 6 to 8 artists that we may select, there are several more that we aren't. So there's quite a bit of responsibility. I think that's the biggest discovery that I've felt over the years, to make sure that we're not repeating ourselves from year to year. How do we keep it fresh and different and constantly expanding the audience's experience of what dance is and can be?
And how many dancers in total are involved in the weekend then?
We have 6, including our flagship company on Saturday, and then we have the both Nele Hulu and Christopher K. Morgan on Friday, so that's 8. But Nele Hulu hosts anywhere from 20 to 30 performers alone in their work. I often talk about that sort of gorgeous chorus work akin to watching an old Balanchine piece like Serenade and seeing that sort of, synchronicity of movement and the gentle sway with all of them. So in total, we have close to 70 artists.
Fantastic. We're actually going to hear some of Nele Hulu's music now, invoking the Pele. So tell us about Pele.
I would not be the expert on Pele, but I think one of the truly special things that Patrick and Christopher, upon introducing them to each other, was how do we honor the culture and ritual from Hawaii in the Mission District. And so we are devising a blessing to call upon Pele during intermission, where the artists, for the first time in Mission, in Walking Distance Dance Festival, will actually meet in between the two spaces tomorrow night.
Neat. So here's some of the chant dedicated to the volcano deity Pele. Christy Bolenroca, have a wonderful festival this weekend. More information at odcdance.org. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you. Pele.
Music to the chanting to the volcano god Pele that you can hear as part of ODC Dance's special weekend of performances, oddance.org for more information. Well, speaking of collaboration with composers and newish music, San Francisco choral artists director since 1995, Megan Solomon, has avidly cultivated engagements with living composers to bridge the gulf between audience, composer, and performer. And under her leadership, SFCA has established the Composer In and Not In Residence programs, the Composer's Invitational, the New Voices Project competition to help launch the artistic careers of young composers under the age of 30, plus SFCA Plus One to expand the repertoire for chamber choir and an additional instrument or ensemble, and the Wild Card program to expand SFCA composer support. Dr. Solomon is active throughout the U.S. and abroad as an innovative teacher, conductor, clinician, and in addition to her work with the choral artists, she currently serves as artistic director of the San Francisco Bach Choir. Megan, a pleasure to welcome you back.
Thank you, David. Lovely to be here.
She's joined by composer and performer on the viola da gamba, Roy Weldon, who is a key figure in the world of new music. He's been profiled as a composer and gambist on Minnesota Public Radio and other PBS stations. And his number of recordings, and award-winning recordings, including Shock of the Old with San Francisco's Common Sense Composers Collective, as well as with Galax, music for viola da gamba. He's also performed with Karen Clark and recorded with her in the Galax Quartet. He's performed and recorded with many international ensembles, including the Boston Camerata and Sequentia. Roy, a pleasure to welcome you to our airways.
Thank you very much.
In half a headphone, that's fine.
I think I broke it.
Oh, wouldn't be the first time guests are manhandling the headphones. Megan, so tell me about the music that's going to be featured in this concert then.
Well, the idea for this concert really originated a couple of years ago. Choral artists is well ensconced in the 21st century repertoire, but I've been working increasingly with the Baroque music area, and particularly with the wonderful Baroque musicians we have here in the Bay Area. And I was having lunch with David Wilson, who is the violinist of the Galax Quartet, and he happened to mention that he was involved in this quartet and had a program coming up. And I suddenly thought a quartet of early music instruments that do contemporary music would be a fascinating combination for us with choral artists. So we started a conversation then 2 years ago about having a collaboration, and the result will be the concerts this and next weekend.
Excellent. You brought some music that we're going to share. Let's hear a little bit of the music of
Robinson McClellan, who is one of the composers who has adapted a piece for us for this concert this weekend. And what we're going to hear is the original version of this for Baroque instruments and singers.
And then more about the concerts coming up with Megan Solomon and composer Roy Weldon.
I lived alone.
A taste of the music of Robinson McClellan. You'll hear part of his Prodigal Songs as part of this Sunday's performance of the San Francisco Choral Artists, also next Saturday in the Peninsula and Sunday in the East Bay. Megan, Veronica Krausis is also figuring strongly in this performances.
Indeed, yes. She's a wonderful L.A. composer, and we commissioned her to write for this particular concert. And what's particularly interesting for San Francisco folks is that this piece has sort of its roots in a wonderful installation by Brian Goggin in San Francisco, which is now, alas, gone. But people will remember driving by a building in the Mission and seeing furniture lamps, tables climbing down the sides of the walls of the building, and it's a wonderful installation. We're sorry it's gone, but poems were written based on the installation, and then Veronica set these poems.
Neat. We have an excerpt of that, of number 5, I Put My Cap in the Cage.
That's from a set that she wrote for us several years ago when we collaborated with a different quartet, and this is with text by Lawrence Ferlinghetti,
who we'll hear, I think, on this recording. Is that
indeed
correct? And then more with both Megan Solomon and Roy Weldon about this weekend and next weekend's concert, the San Francisco Choral Artists.
Put my cap in the cage and went out with a bird on my head.
Veronica Krausis, which will also be represented on the San Francisco Choral Artists concerts Sunday at 4 here in San Francisco at St. Mark's Lutheran Church, next Saturday, the 11th of June at St. Mark's Episcopal down in Palo Alto, and next Sunday in Oakland at St. Paul's Episcopal Church. Megan, how do you choose composers to collaborate with for the Choral Artists?
A million different ways. Listen to music, get ideas from friends, talk to people, go to concerts, just look around. There's so many wonderful composers and so many more people I'd like to commission than I have time and money for.
One of those collaborators is here with us, composer and performer on viola da gamba, Roy Weldon. Roy, tell us about the work of the Galax Quartet.
Well, we've collaborated with a number of artists. We've done concerts with harpsichord. We've done solo singers. We've done computer scientists, astronomers. But this is the first time with a chorus. And it's been a unique experience and an absolutely delightful experience, I have to say. I was worried, as a composer, I was worried about balance for Baroque instruments against a 24-member chorus, approximately 24, and I think it works, and that is in a special category all by itself, which is a plus for orchestration.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, the Galax Quartet is unique in its composition as well as, you know, performing on period instruments, but with two violins, viola da gamba, and cello. What makes that different?
Well, this was a historical ensemble from the 1760s, near the time of the death of the viola da gamba. So anybody playing the viola da gamba at that time almost had to play with violins and cellos. And one of them was a composer and gambist, Carl Friedrich Abel. And we've played a lot of his work. for just this instrumentation or slight variations on the two violins, viola da gamba and cello instrumentation.
We're going to hear the Galax Quartet as we bid adieu in music of Mathieu, aren't we? Including in your quartet is Elizabeth Blumenstock, who will be represented in my next segment with the Voices of Music. So interesting, we are combining all kinds of Bay Area folks here. So we're going to hear an excerpt from Mathieu's first string quartet. This is the Galax Quartet. I thank Roy Weldon as well as Megan Solomon for telling us a little bit about SFCA's performances. More information at sfca.org.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. The Galax Quartet, represented this weekend by the San Francisco Choral Artists Society in a program called 21st Century Baroque, contemporary music as well as music of Bach and Purcell. Sunday's performance here in San Francisco, next Saturday in the Peninsula, and Sunday, next Sunday, in the East Bay. Information about the 21st Century Baroque performance of this choral artists is at sfca.org. Well, award-winning Baroque violinist Rachel Podger, described as the queen of Baroque violin, joins internationally renowned early music ensemble Voices of Music for an evening of dazzling Baroque violin concertos by Bach and Vivaldi next Thursday, June 9th. Voices of Music is currently one of the most popular music ensembles in the world, with an online audience of more than 21 million viewers. Fantastic. Highlights of the concert will include the Bach Concerto for Two Violins with local favorite Elizabeth Blumenstock, just mentioned, joining Rachel, as well as Brandenburg Concerto No. 4, a favorite of mine for being all flutey-like, and that'll be performed with Bach's unique instrumentation of strings and two flauti d'eco, or echo flutes. Together with David Taylor, my guest Hanneke van Proosde is the co-founder and co-director of Voices of Music. She performs regularly as soloist and continuous specialist with Philharmonia Baroque Orchestra, the Festspiel Orchester Göttingen, Concerto Palatino, Magnificat, as well as American Bach soloists. She's also appeared as a guest artist with ensembles around the world and has recorded over 40 discs on various labels. She received her solo and teaching doctoral diplomas from the Royal Conservatory in The Hague in the Netherlands, where she studied recorder, harpsichord, and composition. Hanneke is a co-founder of the Junior Recorder Society in the East Bay and was director of the San Francisco Early Music Ensemble's Medieval Renaissance Workshop for 7 years, and now directs, together with Rotem Gilbert, the SFEMS Recorder Workshop. Hanneke, a pleasure to welcome you to our studios. I missed that mic there. Yeah, indeed. This concert on next Thursday at 8, and it's going to be at the First Congregational Church in Berkeley. Some wonderful music, Bach, Vivaldi. What a fantastic collaboration. But first, tell us how you first heard the music of Rachel Podger.
Oh, that's an interesting story. About 14 years ago, David Taylor and I were sitting at Pete's Coffee enjoying a coffee, and we were hearing beautiful music by Bach. It was so beautiful that we had to find out who it was. So we went to the register and asked, "Who are you playing right now?" And it was Rachel Podger, her solo Bach CD. And we thought, well, we must play with her sometime. She is amazing. many years have passed, and we have worked with her. We have worked with her. We've seen her in Europe. We've worked with her here locally with Philharmonia Baroque Orchestra. And we are very excited to work with her with Voices of Music this time.
What is her? She's going to be doing the Bach double violin concerto. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. She'll be playing that with Elizabeth Blumenstock. She'll also be playing the E major concerto by Bach as well. She'll be playing several Vivaldi concerti, the violin concerto in D major, Opus 4, number 11 from La Stravaganza. And we're just really excited to have her play with us. She's also playing the violin solo in the concerto number 4, Brandenburg concerto.
I'm fascinated by the extraordinary number of viewers you have gotten online. How has that taken off so much?
Well, it was a real adventure for us, too. When we started it 10 years ago, we had no idea. We basically have been recording our performances, and we put them out free for people to share, to see. And it's introduced a lot of people to Baroque music that otherwise would never have known about Baroque music. And it reaches people in areas where there are no concerts, or get people interested in Baroque music to go wherever they live.
Mm-hmm. And so going into the schools is an important part of the whole mission.
Indeed. We've certainly, a lot of our videos are being used in colleges and at universities for music majors, but also for people who are just interested in music.
So you're going to be quite busy on this concert as well. They say the triple threat of music, dance, and singing. Your triple threat is going to be you'll be playing harpsichord, organ, and recorder on these concerts.
Almost. I can, but in this one, I'm playing recorder and harpsichord, and my colleague, Catherine Heater, she'll be playing harpsichord and organ.
Mm-hmm. Take us to the first days of Voices of Music when you and David first started things.
Well, we basically wanted to make music with colleagues that we enjoyed making music with and invite them to make music with us. In Voices of Music, every musician has a voice. We enjoy working together with people where they can bring in their own musical ideas, and often our concerts one day from the next will be different because someone may decide to go a different route right then and there. And so you have people who are amazing players as well as amazing listeners, and you make it work together.
And have you folks performed as part of the Berklee Festival before?
We have, and it's very nice to be back.
Mm-hmm. Is everything done on original instruments with your ensemble, or is there a combination?
They're all original instruments or copies of original instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this particular concert features Bach and Vivaldi. What's after this concert? What are you working on?
We have many plans. We're actually celebrating our 10th year next season.
Oh, fantastic.
So we have lots of interesting things for that coming out. And then we have a backlog of our videos. So I'm sure in the summer we'll bring out many of the performances that we've done in the past 2 years.
And add to your millions of viewers on YouTube and beyond.
Who knows?
Well, we have an excerpt of the great Rachel Podger playing a bit of Stravaganza. Which concerto are we going to hear here? This is, let's see, track.
This is...
D major concerto, Opus 4, number 11, which will be represented on this concert. Is
indeed.
That correct? Hanukkah, thanks for coming in today. Information about the festival next Thursday at 8 p.m., Voices of Music, and guest Rachel Podger as part of the Berklee Early Music Festival 2016. The concert's next Thursday at First Congregational Church on Channing Way, entrance at Dana and Durant. Tickets and information at berkleefestival.org. Now enjoy some of the music of Rachel Podger and Antonio Vivaldi. Thanks again, Hanukkah.
Thanks.
music of Vivaldi as performed by Rachel Podger. I asked Hanukkah to come back to the mic to talk about what else is happening as part of the Berklee Festival.
The Berklee Festival is an amazing place where people from all over the world come to perform and come to listen. There are many main stage areas, concerts that are wonderful. Rachel is also doing a concert with Christian Bezuidenhout. Concerta Politina will be coming. Vox Luminis, Arcetti, a local group, is playing. Philharmonia Baroque is playing. Juilliard 415. Parthenia, it's really a wonderful group. And then there's also the wonderful Fringe events. You will find all the information on berkleefestival.org.
Thanks, Annika. Still to come on this hour of Open Air, you'll learn about some book reading suggestions from Peter Robinson, our regular contributor. And next, a little bit about a special Cole Porter event that's happening. I have a background here. Yes, here we are. Ah. The Cole Porter Society is celebrating the 125th birthday of Cole Porter and featuring the San Francisco premiere of the lost and rediscovered portfolio of songs written in 1928 by Porter in Paris. That's tomorrow evening at the Herbst Theater here in San Francisco. Including, in addition to Noah Griffin, will be cabaret favorites Deborah Winters, Amanda King, versatile musical theater principal Patrick Levesque, Sing for America director and recitalist Martin Bell, Opera San Jose star tenor Michael Daly, an amazing lineup, and Grammy-nominated soprano Desiree Goyette, who doubles as the evening's music director. The evening will also feature a dance performance by Chantala Davis, along with other dancers, and a performance by 16-year-old Tiburon singing prodigy Sofia Perozzi. On top of all that, Berklee native and now legendary New York Society pianist Peter Minton will join forces with the Grammy Award-winning composer-arranger Lawrence Hobgood to accompany the ensemble on double grand pianos. Noah Griffin began singing with the San Francisco Boys Chorus at the age of 7, continuing a choral career at Fisk University in Tennessee with the University Choir, which toured and performed with Eugene Ormandy's Philadelphia Orchestra, among other ensembles. He later went to Harvard Law and performed at a host of jazz clubs in and around the Boston area, gaining the attention of no other than the great Duke Ellington. Returning to San Francisco, Noah spent 35 years in government, politics, and media performing as a sideline whenever and wherever he could, including the Purple Onion, for the opening of BART, for the 80th and 90th and 100th celebration of the great San Francisco earthquake. The greats he has worked with are too numerous to mention, and he was a featured soloist for 10 years with the Walt Tolleson Society Big Band. He co-wrote the opening day song for the San Francisco Giants, as well as the official ballad of the Golden Gate Bridge. With extensive television and radio background, he has worked as a talk show host on ABC KGO Radio, has been a co-morning drive host on KYA, as well as other stations and channels. I add to the list that includes Eddie Fisher and George Shearing as folks who sing praises about his singing. He and his wife Meredith Browning have formed the Cole Porter Society, the goal of which is to take the composer's music into schools. And tomorrow evening at 8, the benefit is happening at the Herbst Theater. Noah, a pleasure to welcome you to our airwaves.
Well, thank you so much, David.
He's joined by the director of the show, Ken Bloom. Mr. Bloom has been directing for 10 years at New Playwrights Theater of Washington, also at the Great Lakes Theater Festival, BAM, and New York City Opera. He's written for the Washington Post, LA Times, and New York Times, and has 17 books to his credit, including the bestseller Broadway Musicals, the 100 Greatest Shows of All Time. Pleasure to welcome Ken to our airwaves as well.
Thanks.
So, Noah, this is a benefit for the society which you co-founded. When were you first exposed to the wonderful music of Cole Porter, and what got you hooked?
Well, I was exposed as a child in the 50s, as you recall, in the top 40. They'd play everything. They'd play for Sinatra, would play the Beatles, Ferranti and Teicher. But I didn't really know the composers. that point. I auditioned at the Hungry Eye in 1962, and Merle Hoover, who was a wonderful pianist, told me, he says, no, you have to learn your standards. So I realized the people who were actually writing these songs. And when I went to Harvard Law School, I realized that Cole Porter had gone there. And the dean sent me down to his law firm in New York. And I was thinking of going into music full time. Got waylaid about 35 years in government, politics, and media. And when I came out of that with the stroke 10 years ago, the woman who saved my life, I married, she said, why don't you do what it is you were supposed to do? And I'll help you with that. So we went into music. So I loved Cole Porter. So we started off with his concerts and sold out. And eventually came to the conclusion that we need to hook up with the Cole Porter Society. We searched the internet and found there was no Cole Porter Society. So we called the very law firm that the dean had sent me down to when I was in law school many years before, and the successor to the person I had talked with was there, and they got in touch with the collateral part of the family that took over his mother's estate in 1952 when she died, and they said, go for it. And they were really nice to us, and since then we formed the society with a mission and the goal of taking the genre of his music through the genius of Cole Porter into the school so young kids will know who he is, and we can continue with his music, and it won't be just like German Lieder, very specialized something over on one side.
Well, he's a fascinating character. In fact, Joy, the Cole Porter well runs so deep, just among the top 10, Night and Day, Begin the Begin, sure. I Get a Kick Out of You, I've Got You Under My Skin, My Heart Belongs to Daddy, You're the Top, In the Still of the Night, always with such wonderful turns of phrases. And unique in that Cole wrote his own words as well as music.
Jimmy Durante used to say, words and music by Cole Porter. And right, I think there were just a couple of songs he actually bought from a cowboy poet, Don't Fence Me In, but he cleaned those lyrics up. I mean, the range of what he did was incredible. In fact, last week I was watching the LBJ All the Way special, and they closed with Don't Fence Me In, a Cole Porter song, the last place that you would think that you would hear Cole Porter connected with LBJ.
I should say. Well, you must be familiar with Kevin Kline's marvelous portrayal of him back in 2004 in this movie.
It's named after the song I really loved. Debuted Red Hot and Blue in 1935 and debuted by Ethel Merman and Bob Hope. But that is much more realistic portrayal of his life than was Night and Day, 1948, starring Cary Grant. Probably should have had Fred Astaire playing his role, but as Cole Porter said at the time, if you have a chance to have Cary Grant play you, would you turn it down?
Well, DeLovely with Kevin Kline really delved into his very complicated personal life, even though he truly loved his wife, Linda Lee Porter,
yes,
but pursued additional relationships of both the male and female variety.
And interestingly enough, in conversation with Tony Bennett, one of the things that he says about Cole Porter's songs, the reason they remain so fresh his entire life is he was always falling in love. And that's a great way of putting it. He should also be a hero to the disabled community, because after that riding accident in 1937, Cole Porter had over 33 different operations.
Well, back up a minute. So he was acclaimed Broadway writer before this horrible accident happened. What, 1937?
1937. It was a riding accident. He was warned off against taking a spirited horse, and all you had to do was challenge Cole. He took the horse. The horse fell, rolled over both of his legs, crushed them, but osteomyelitis did not set in until 1958. His mother and his wife got together and said, under no circumstances are you to remove that leg unless you absolutely have to. After the mother and the wife had died, he had the leg removed when osteomyelitis set in, and he never wrote another note. They knew something that he didn't about himself. He said he wrote while he was waiting for the ambulance to come at long last love. I doubt that. He was in too much pain, but he never wanted to admit to having any pain or any discomfort. He had some pillows stitched around his home, and one was never complain, never explain. And that was pretty much what he lived by.
Yeah, and another well-known quote is, I wanted every kind of love that was available, but I could never find them in the same person or the same sex.
I think they asked Gore Vidal, did you make love to a woman or a man the first time? He says, I don't know. I don't remember.
Well, Ken,
by the way, I want to say quickly before you were adding everybody that was there, Charles Troy is out from Chicago, and he's going to do a pre-presentation on Cole in Paris for half an hour before the program begins.
Fantastic. Well, speaking of that, Ken Bloom, in addition to, there's so much known Cole Porter to mine, and here we have these new discoveries from 1928 in Paris. How were they rediscovered, or where did we come across these?
It was so strange. A singer, Amy Burton, who sings with the New York City Opera, wanted me to hear an act she was doing of Cole Porter, and she sang one of these songs. And I was really intrigued and, you know, followed up on it. And it turned out to be this song he wrote for a French review called La Revue des Ambassadeurs in Paris in 1928. And the show was done really for Americans by Americans. Everybody in the cast was American. Fred Waring was the conductor. Frances Gershwin, George Gershwin's sister, sang in the show. And in fact, opening night, George was there writing An American in Paris and played for his sister on opening night.
Wow.
Which was pretty fantastic. Wow. And the show never came to America, and they had a few sheets published, but not everything, and it was all lost. So we looked around in Paris, couldn't find anything, and we did the show in Paris for what we had. And then we were going to do it in New York City, and we went to the Fred Waring Archive in State College, Pennsylvania, and he never threw anything out, including the original orchestrations for the Ambassador Review, and we found the lost songs, the lyrics. We did those arrangements in New York, and we did it in Marin County with Noah 2 years ago, I guess, and now we're doing it again. And it's funny, fewer than, I'd say, 2,500 people have ever heard these songs.
How do they stack up?
I think they're fantastic. Yeah. They're really early Porter. You can sort of see the basis for all the rest of his career that went on.
And there's wordplay involved?
All the wordplay, all the subtleties, all the double entendres. It's all there. And, you know, he was a big failure in the United States. So he, in the early 20s, he had flop shows. And so he went to Paris, joined the French Foreign Legion, and he fell in love with Paris. And you think about all the shows and songs he wrote about Paris, Can Can, a song called Paris, a show called Paris, 50 Million Frenchmen, another show. He really loved the French in Paris. And this was his introduction there.
Wow.
And the show cost $75 at the time, which meant no French person could afford to go to see the show. It was all for the rich upper-crust set that Cole Porter, you know, palled around with since he was one of them.
Which we're hoping will also be ponying up for tomorrow night's benefit right here in San Francisco.
Absolutely.
Information at coleportersociety.org for more information. Quite a stellar lineup that you corralled for this show, Noah.
We got the best musicians that we could in the Bay Area, the best vocalists, and also we brought the folks from New York. Peter Menton, who started off here. San Francisco is now a very well-regarded society pianist in New York City. And Lawrence Hobgood is a Grammy winner, who's amazing. Very, very different styles, but both very complimentary at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking forward. We have a lot of fun doing the program, so I think the audience will have a lot of fun as well. And they'll learn something with the pre-program presentation.
And you're going to be singing one of the tunes, one of those recently rediscovered tunes. Tell us a little bit about Boulevard Break.
Well, it's interesting because the Boulevard Break is actually about some of the ladies of the evening who hung out on the boulevard. Cole gets a big kick out of writing about them, and he writes about them in interesting ways. I'm trying to think about what else I can tell you about the particular program.
Well, the song is about the men who would go up and down the boulevard, sort of strutting their stuff. That's the Boulevard Break, and choosing which woman he wanted to take home.
Oh, interesting.
All so right. There's all these double entendres. You know, another song is called Pilot Me. And you're the pilot I need. Take my ship on its maiden trip. And all these double entendres. Okay. It's a lot of fun and really funny.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, especially gentlemen, and even incidental men, we've got some good news. If you want to skip with us and take a nice trip with us, we'll ask you on the ship with us to take a big cruise. We don't know where we're going to go. Who wouldn't care? Wouldn't know. But if you're blue and need a cure, then you better come along. We'll do everything for you to make the bells ring for you, and we'll even sing for you a traveling song. Keep moving, keep moving. It's interesting how it goes because it's a little more 20-ish than Cole Porter evolves into the next year with Paris, when he has Let's Misbehave and also Let's Do It, which are the two big songs that we remember from that. And Looking at You is one song that a lot of people would know that actually survived that show, did not need to be found because it is one we know of.
the lost songs from Les Ambassadeurs from 1928, including a bunch of familiar tunes, right? We'll be heard tomorrow evening in the Herbst Theater.
Right. We'll do a medley of the songs that people pretty much associate with Cole.
It's a benefit for the Cole Porter Society, which encourages the music of Cole Porter to be discovered by young people in schools throughout the Bay Area and beyond. More information at thecoleportersociety.org. Gentlemen, thank you for coming in and sharing some of this. I'm looking forward to the performance myself.
Thank you so much for the time.
Thanks.
Next, our book segment with Peter Robinson.
My life, I will remember it, I know. I'll never forget the day I read a book. It was contagious, 70 pages. There were pictures here and there, so it wasn't hard to bear. The day I read a book, it's a shame I don't recall the name of the book.
It wasn't a history. Month of June turns to summer, and in summer we think of summer reading ideas. And who better to talk about some ideas for summer reading and activities than our own regular contributor, Peter Robinson. Hi, Peter.
Hi, David. Yeah, good to be here. And, of course, with the Berkeley Book Fair coming up, but also with travel. If you're traveling on a plane and you need a good travel companion, a book in your hand is a good start. Or more serious today, if you're standing in line waiting for the TSA to pack your bag, then consider an
War and Peace, you might consider.
War and Peace, or that's a good one. Yeah, mind you, it might take a little longer than, even though the lines are long, it'll take longer. So I've got a collection of books that straddle history, philosophy, thrillers, dare I use the word chick lit, and sociology. But I'll first begin with an audio book, because if you are standing in line, the reader coming in through your ears is actually quite a good way to take some of the, I want to say, irritation out of standing there.
You can say, yes, yeah, irritation, stress.
And the first book, which I did listen to as an audio book, is by Arianna Huffington. It's called The Sleep Revolution. And I just want to say that with an audio book, the actual quality of the reading becomes important. And even though Arianna comes through with an Anglo-Greek accent, she is very listenable to. And The Sleep Revolution is a book about change. It's the fact that the nation as a whole is not getting enough sleep. And she uses her own case study as the basis of the story. She, in fact, described herself as a workaholic. Now, today, she has a couch in her office. She takes afternoon naps. And she believes that this process has made her more productive and more creative. And so she knocks the old idea of the kind of macho thing, I can get by on 3 or 4 hours of sleep. That is not good for the body. It's not good for the mind. It's not good for the spirit.
Thank you, Peter, that Arianna is now justifying my afternoon naps. I appreciate that.
Well, I've just woken David up now because I already tell the sound of my voice is sending him on to La La Land. Anyhow, here we go. So I highly recommend it. I think it's a good audio book. Put it on in the evening. Put it on before you go to bed. And guess what? You may end up going to sleep. Now, my second choice has got an eye on November. November, as we know, is the time of the election. And this is a thick book, so you probably want to start it now. It's called The American President, and it's by the distinguished historian Dr. Luchenberg, who's taught both at Cornell and also more recently at Charlotte. And it covers the American presidency from the time of the McKinley assassination through until the last years of Bill Clinton. So we get a full range of really the 20th century. And he is a scholar, but he has the great gift of writing great narrative. There are no footnotes in this book, so you can go from page to page, and you will get valuable insights on the temperament, the character, the different sorts of presidency, and he moves from the imperial presidency to the imperiled presidency. Highly recommended. That's the title of the book, The American President, a fantastic history of how the 20th century evolved in political terms, in character terms, based on the man who sits there in the White House. Highly recommended. Don't forget, it's 800 pages. Start reading now if you want to be up to date by the month of November.
And it will make a nice doorstop afterwards.
It'll make a nice doorstop, and it may also stop you having to listen to the endless debates. I've always believed that if two people agree, one of them is superfluous. But in this particular debate, God knows, we may have more superfluity than we ever, ever asked for. Now, let's deal with this question of whether it's a relevant genre in literature. The word is chick lit. I think it's a useful, helpful description of a book which I think would be particularly popular with female book clubs. It's called Eligible. And it's part of something known as the Austin Project. And the Austin Project is a really clever marketing strategy to rewrite some of Jane Austen's novels, but put them into contemporary terms. So Eligible is really a story that takes Pride and Prejudice, but it sets it in contemporary Cincinnati. Curtis Stittenfield, who is the native of the town, is the author on the book. And we have all the old characters. We have Chip Bingley, but this time he returns as a handsome doctor. And, of course, we have Mr. Darcy, who indeed is nothing less than a neurosurgeon. And, indeed, we have Mrs. Bennett, Mr. Bennett, but we are now living in 21st century Cincinnati. It has a couple of hot sex scenes, which I think will keep you going, even if you don't agree with transforming, essentially, Jane Austen to the 21st century. It's a scene really to do with hate sex, and it's seen, I think, dramatically and descriptively with clever social commentary about what's going on in our own world. So that's, I think, a different sort of book. It's unusual. It's called Eligible. It is part of the Austen Project.
Well, now, Peter, I've heard of never refusing a mint, but now we have to never refuse a chiclet suggestion on your part.
Okay, yes, a chiclet can also give you an addiction to chocolate, which, of course, is another book to come out eventually on the danger of sugar. And we move on to The Hero of France. This is a great thriller set in France in 1940, and it's by that distinguished novelist, Alan First. And I think what is interesting about him is history is as good as his narrative thriller writing. It's that very first year, the year is 1940, and as the scene opens, you feel you are sitting in a boulevard cafe on the Champs-Élysées as the Nazi stormtroopers are marching up to the Arc de Triomphe. Great visual writing, and it begins, of course, with the setup for how do you get pilots, Allied pilots who've been parachuted into France, how do you get them onto the escape line? And it begins at the American hospital, which, of course, in 1940 was still open. I highly recommend Alan First. He's a detailed writer, and he is somebody who really understands the history, the question in this case of trust and betrayal. Do you join the resistance or do you collaborate? A great story, a quick read, just under 200 pages. The title again, The Hero of France, and the author, Alan First. Now we're moving on to something a little different, not for everybody, but I think it's an important part of our life today. It's called Reclaiming Conversation, and it's by Sherry Turtle. And the subtitle, I think, tells us all, it's the power of speech or talk in our digital world. And she does a very fine analysis of whether we are actually losing the art of talking to each other. We can text, we can email, we can instant message, we can send photographs. How about saying hello? And this, I think, is a valuable sociological study. She teaches at MIT. She's done many projects over the last 20 years with students. And she is concerned that we're losing quite literally the art to talk. Well, of course, here at KLW, radio is indeed the theatre of the mind. Talk is what we do, and let's hope we too, like you, are listeners. So that's a great title, Reclaiming Conversation. The author is Sherry Turtle. So these are just some of the range of things that have been on my shelf throughout the summer. And the one I'll finish with is called Free Speech. It's by Timothy Garton Ash. He teaches at Oxford in England, and he has run a project over the last year, which is now in book form, about the nature of free speech, the restrictions of free speech, and what does it mean to absolutely open your mouth and say things and not get prosecuted. I think this is a really important issue in today's timely world. So there we have it. A variety of different books, The American Presidency, The Hero of France, a new book out on free speech, the Jane Austen project called Eligible, Arianna Huffington and Sleep Revolution, and Terry Turtle Reclaiming Conversation. And let's remember what Mark Twain said: the man who does not read has no advantage over the man who cannot read.
Very good, Peter.
You have anything to say to that, David?
I don't. I can't follow Mark Twain with anything myself.
Okay, there we go. Anyhow, good reading, happy reading. Put a CD with a book in your car if you're traveling by car, or else take the e-book on the plane. But remember, turn the page.
Thanks, Peter. A little bit of music of Tchaikovsky from the Symphony No. 6, Pathétique, to round things out here on this week's edition of Open Air. Tickets to give away to the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony's performance of that very symphony tomorrow. This will be Saturday evening at 8 at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. 415-841-4134. We have 6 pairs of complimentary tickets. Should be a wonderful concert. Don Harms leads the orchestra in not only the Tchaikovsky Symphony No. 6, but a work by Louise Farenc, an overture No. 1 for orchestra. She lived from 1804 to 1875. Significant in that she, as a teacher and composer at the San Francisco Conservatory in that time and age, demanded the same pay as a woman as the men were getting. So you'll hear music of Farenc, the overture No. 1, as well as a fascinating piece for 4 bassoons. It's a concerto for bassoon quartet by June Bonacich. And the bassoon soloists will be Carla Wilson, Juliet Hammack, Jeremiah Broom, and Barbara Jones. Tickets for the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony, 415-841-4134. That concert Saturday evening at 8 at the San Francisco Conservatory, 50 Oak Street. 415-841-4134. And that's Open Air for this week. David LaTulipe, your host. Thanks to Niels Swinkels, who produces the show, and happy vacationing to him over the next several weeks. Our shows are archived at our website, kalw.org. If you have a show suggestion, by all means, send me an email, david@kalw.org.